The New Republic officer's dress uniform tended to have an effect on its audience. When Wedge and his pilot strode into the outer court of the royal residence, the crowd assembled there voiced an appreciative awe that was music to Wedge's ears. Hallis, her height amplified by the way her brown hair was piled atop her head, moved up beside him.
"I found out who that other room belongs to," she said. "The one where the man went after he'd been through your quarters?"
Wedge nodded. "It belongs to Tomer Darpin." She looked crestfallen.
"You already knew?"
"No, I guessed, based on some other evidence I've picked up. But it's very valuable to me to have your confirmation. Where is your recording unit?"
She pointed to her hair. "The lenses and microphones are up here, and I have cables down to the processor and storage memory, which are on the small of my back."
"Less menacing. I think you'll get further with a rig like this."
"I suspect you're right." She moved off into the crowd.
Wedge steeled himself for another endless round of handshaking and introductions, but the diplomatic ritual was to have an unexpected benefit. The fifth introduction he received was from the Kartan Minister of Cognitive Machinery, and on his arm was Iella Wasiri.
"This young lady," the wispy-bearded minister said, "has expressed an interest in meeting the famous pilot."
"I'm delighted to oblige," Wedge said. When he took her hand, he felt something crinkle in his palm. Iella withdrew her hand and departed with her minister, leaving Wedge with a scrap of flimsy. On it was written the name Rogris, followed by a series of numbers, recognizable as a specific communications frequency.
"Before the day's events begin," called a courtier, "a diversion. Grand Champion Cherise Kehanadi accepts a title challenge from Lord Pilot Aniboros Keshelapan."
Cherise was already in the center of the circle. She looked tired, a little disheveled, not her meticulously neat self. Into Wedge's ear, Hobby said, "She's wearing the same clothes from yesterday." Wedge nodded. "There's something wrong here." The announcer signaled for the fight to begin. It didn't take long. The challenger moved in with a thrust that was little more than an initial probe. Cherise swept it aside and, in the same motion, threw herself forward, a daring counterstrike that left her exposed, but caught her enemy in the ribcage. There was a crack and a flash of blue light, and with a cry, her challenger went down. Cherise looked at the Perator. The ruler of Kartan shrugged and put his hand out, palm down, the signal that the defeated man should die. Cherise slowly shook her head and turned her back on the defeated man and the Perator. She moved into the crowd, and the audience parted for her, many of its members offering a low noise of surprise. "Did she just do what I thought she did?" Wedge asked. "Did she just defy the Perator?" "That's what I got out of it, boss," Hobby said. Wedge maneuvered through the crowd. "Cherise, what are you doing?" She offered an indifferent shrug. "You haven't changed since yesterday. Have you slept?"
She shook her head. "I don't need sleep to deal with these pretenders."
She looked over Wedge's shoulder, and her expression became even more mournful.
"You'd best go. Someone might grow suspicious."
She turned her back on him. Wedge turned to look. Over his shoulder, a few meters back, doing a very good job of looking innocuous, stood Iella. Wedge froze and continued to scan the crowd in that direction. Who else could have provoked such a response from Cherise? He noted and dismissed a couple dozen faces. No, she had to have been referring to Iella. But she shouldn't have known Iella's face. To know it, she had to have seen it last night. She must have followed him to his meeting with Iella, must have later gotten a look at Iella's face by some means. And now she was... Wedge headed for her, but before he could take half a dozen steps through the milling crowd, the announcer called out,
"Attend! Before this day is given over entirely to demonstrations of the blast sword art, the Perator wishes to address us and all the world on the matter of today's gathering."
tapestries high up on two of the walls drew aside, revealing the flat screens Wedge had seen on the night of his arrival on planet. The screens showed wavering visions of a crowd, this crowd, and then settled on the face of the Perator.
"On this historic day," the Perator said, "I address all of Adumar, something I find I will be doing often. Hidden for centuries by distance and forgetfulness, we find ourselves now within reach of new friends who would embrace us as equals. And I find that we lag behind these united worlds, and only one characteristic. We are a world divided by ancient borders that serve only to fragment our ability to make wise decisions affecting all Adumar. The establishment of a unified world government will allow us to interact with outside worlds more effectively,"
the Perator continued.
"So, in this memorable day, I hereby establish the government of the world of Adumar. With both humility and trepidation, I take the reins of command of a united world."
Portions of the audience applauded, but a riot of noise erupted from one large cluster of the audience, one, Wedge saw, that was dominated by foreign dignitaries.
"Wait!"
cried one dignitary.
"There's been no vote! Liar!"
That was a shout from a deep-voiced representative wearing muted greens.
"You cannot unilaterally..."
The rest of his statement was drowned out by the rising volume of applause and shouts from elsewhere in the audience. Not one of these angry declamations was broadcast over the flat screens on the walls. Wedge supposed that a directional voice pickup was being used so that the Perator's words and only his words would be broadcast. Wedge glared at Tomer. "You know what they call it? When one ruler declares a world government and the rest don't agree." He could hear the anger in his own voice. "We get a war of conquest, lasers and missiles fired on civilian populations." But the diplomat did not look at all abashed. "You can't blame this on me. He's taken our suggestions about a world government and simply sliced them into his own ambitions for rule." Wedge's anger didn't waver. "But are you going to press him to abandon this plan if it leads to war?" Tomer shook his head. "This is a strictly internal affair, General. The Perator might be using our presence, our organizational needs, as a rationalization for this move, but we're not involved, and we can't become involved." Wedge struggled to keep his voice low. "Kartan and its satellite nations are powerful enough to conquer the nations most likely to resist. So, they form a world government, and it's a state where human life is only valuable when it's harvested for personal honor. You think it will have anything in common with the New Republic?"
Toma nodded, his expression confident. "We'll be able to work it out. Speaking of which..."
"More diversion for the attendees," cried the announcer. "Cherish Kahanadi accepts a ground title challenge from Lord Pilot Thanir Kasakai."
Wedge spotted and reached Cherise before she entered the circle. He glowered at her.
"You're committing suicide."
"No, I can beat him."
Yet there was no anger in her voice, no emotion of any kind.
"Probably. If you do, will you accept another challenge? And another?"
"Yes."
"Until what?" He leaned closer. "You spurned the Perator earlier. Now, to avenge the insult and please the Perator, anyone who defeats you will kill you. No one will offer you mercy ever again, correct?"
Wedge drew a deep breath and tried to settle his thoughts.
"Cherise, I'm going to say some things you're probably going to deny. I don't care. I know I'm right. You care about me, and you know I care about someone else, and you've decided to die rather than live with that."
She just looked at him.
"I wish," he said, "that in addition to caring about me, you had some respect for me."
"How can you say that?"
At last there was emotion in her voice, unrestrained anger.
"If I did not respect..."
"You wouldn't be pointlessly throwing your life away in direct contradiction to everything I believe. Cherise, this is an act of dishonor."
Her tone turned contemptuous.
"You really believe that?"
"I can prove it to you. What is it about me that you and the other Adumari think is so honorable?
Your success in killing the enemy.
Why do I kill the enemy, Charisse?
For the honor.
Circular thinking. I'm honorable because I killed the enemy, and I kill the enemy for the honor. Charisse, here's the truth. I kill the enemy. So someone, somewhere, probably someone I will never meet, will be happy. That's the only honorable thing about my profession. It's not the killing. It's making the galaxy a little better.
She shook her head, unbelieving.
And now you're here, thinking like an immature girl instead of a woman. Anxious to throw away your life because you're unhappy now. And because you've been told all your life that there's honor in doing something like this. Tell me, where's the honor? Are you making Adumar a better place? Are you giving anyone a better life? Are you weeding bad men out of the court of Kartan? Or are you just cutting them down randomly?
I...
Just stop doing this, Charisse. Figure out how you're going to live and be happy, not why you can't. We'll talk. You'll learn how.
Something settled in Charisse's expression.
Very well, she said. After this fight.
Refuse this challenge. It's meaningless.
It's meaningless. But I've already accepted it. I can't withdraw my acceptance now. I'd be shamed forever.
She turned away and entered the circle. And then Charisse and Thenir moved against one another in a furious exchange of thrusts and parries. Thenir's blows were strong and lightning fast, and it seemed to Wedge that Charisse had slowed. One of Thenir's blows, almost too fast to trace, flicked past Charisse's defense to strike her in the chest. There was a crack of released energy. She lay, unmoving, her eyes closed, her breath coming fast and shallow. Thenir looked out into the crowd. A lady at the edge of the circle smiled at him and held out her hand, palm down.
So it is,
Thenir said, and raised the point of his blast sword. Wedge took a step forward, opened his mouth to speak, but he was a half second behind Jansen, who shouted a bellow that filled the chamber,
Challenge!
Thenir smiled at him.
Very well. As soon as I dispose of this ground-bound rubbish, we can begin.
Jansen's tone became mocking.
No, no, no. You kill her, and I withdraw the challenge.
A murmur rose in the crowd, a sound of surprise. Thenir's face darkened.
You insult me, Major.
Tomer, behind Wedge and Jansen, whispered,
You can't do that. If you put conditions on the offering of a challenge, it suggests that you have no interest in dueling him, only in the conditions.
Jansen whispered back,
Thank you, Tomer. Now I understand.
He raised his voice.
Yes, Thenir, I insult you.
The murmurs in the crowd grew louder.
You see, you're just not good enough to face me in the air or on the ground. I have no interest in dueling you. I'll do it for the girl's sake. Spare her, I'll give you this once-in-a-lifetime chance. Kill her, and I'll treat you like the nobody you are, and you'll never get to face me.
Thenir looked down at Charisse. His conflict was clear to Wedge. Kill the girl, not just for the honor, but to offend Jansen, or accept the challenge and gobble up all the honor he could. He sheathed his sword.
Accept, he said. I will put your words on the tip of my blast sword and reinsert them anew.
He moved away from Charisse, and Wedge and his pilots kneeled beside her.
Upper left pectoral, Tycho said. Survivable, but she's in shock. That can kill her.
Wedge swore to himself.
Tycho, get her to the plaza. Don't let anybody stop you. Hobby, relay a message via the X-Wings to Allegiance. Have them scramble a medical team down in the shuttle.
In seconds, both pilots were gone. Wedge and Jansen turned to look at Thenir. Jansen picked up Charisse's blast sword and stepped into the circle. The announcer's voice rang out.
Our new ground champion, Lord Pilot Thenir Kasakai, accepts the challenge of Major Wass Jansen of the New Republic Diplomatic Envoy.
There was little applause from the crowd this time. Wedge sensed a breathlessness to their expectation. He shared it.
Honor!
or death,
the announcer said. Thanir assumed an on-guard pose. Jansen switched Charisse's blast sword to his left hand.
Wait, look at this!
He waved it furiously in the air before him.
Look, a bantha!
The glowing trail left in the air by the tip of his blast sword did, in fact, resemble a child's scrawled impression of a bantha. Wedge frowned. Jansen wasn't left-handed. It wasn't a good idea to leave himself exposed this way, his sole ready weapon in his offhand. Thanir just waited.
Are you ready to die yet? One more.
Jansen traced another design. It was a stick figure of a man with a ridiculously tiny circle for a head.
It's Thanir Kasikai!
Thanir, all business, lunged at Jansen, bringing their hilt guards crashing into one another. The New Republic pilot brought his right forearm up in a blow that snapped Thanir's head back and smashed the man's nose flat. Then he seized Thanir's sword hand and slammed it down across his upraised knee. Thanir's sword point hit the floor with a loud blaster pop, and the hilt followed, dropping from his nerveless fingers. Finally, Jansen brought his boot heel down on the other man's sword blade. The blade parted with a metallic sound. Thanir responded by reaching for his dagger. Jansen let him get it into his hand, then spun into a kick that further punished Thanir's sword hand and sent the dagger flying.
Forgot to mention, Jansen said. On some worlds, people fight with their feet, too. Feet, hands.
He brought his hands up in a standard unarmed combat pose, left arm and side leading. Confused and uncertain, blood streaming from his nose, Thanir brought up his own hands in an imitation of Jansen's posture. Jansen smiled and waded in. Wedge struggled to keep a wince from his face. It was a massacre. Thanir's final few blows made it clear that he could barely see and wasn't thinking at all. He lashed out against empty air, looking randomly for a foe in clear view a meter before him.
At least you could say you were knocked out by a well-struck blow of the fist, Jansen said. If I were going to be nice to you, that is.
He held up his open hand, palm toward his opponent, until Thanir's bleary gaze fixed on it. Then he stretched his hand full out to his side and slapped Thanir, a blow that sounded like the crack of an energy whip. He drew his hand back again, but Thanir's eyes rolled up in his head and his knees collapsed under him. He hit the floor with a grunt and his eyes fluttered shut. Jansen waved jauntily at the crowd and returned to Wedge's side, whistling. Applause broke out in the crowd, but it was not universal. Exclamations and murmurs competed with it in volume. Jansen shrugged. Who's hungry? Wedge grinned. I'm buying. Wedge kept the comlink's power output turned low, so that his signal could not possibly carry as far as Agonizer. And every half hour, he put in a call for Admiral Rogris. Shortly after Adumar's sun sank and the first of her two moons rose, he got an answer. Admiral Rogris was not too long in coming, accompanied by a second figure who hung back. Wedge nodded toward the other presence.
Your bodyguard, Admiral? A local or an imperial? A faithful son of the Empire,
Rogris said, his tone jovial.
Come to protect me and to witness from afar your bribe attempt.
Wedge smiled and shook his head.
Bribe attempt? I'm afraid I'm here empty-handed. Ah, oh, you're not here to offer me a command, a salary, the gratitude of the Rebel Alliance. If I'd only just betray those I've served faithfully for longer than you've been alive. I must say, my boy, I'm disappointed.
No, Wedge lost his smile. But I do have something to offer you. A way out of your dilemma. Just listen for a moment, Admiral. I want you to hear what I have to say. Rogris considered, then nodded. It's obviously in your best interest if the Adumari choose to side with the Empire. Not because it's your mission, but because the alternative will mean your ruin. Probably your death. A suicide, I expect. Rogris didn't answer. He just cocked an eyebrow, his expression dubious, and waited.
Because if Adumar sides with the new Republic, you're obliged to contact your superiors in spite of the oath you swore on their behalf, and they send in an invasion force. The invasion force hammers Adumar so badly that it's shattered, probably not worth sweeping up the pieces. A metaphor, I suppose, for your word of honor, which will be ruined. Listen, Rogris, we're in kind of the same position here. Play by the rules, do as we're told, keep our careers, and lose everything. Or risk, and probably lose everything, except our word. The thing is, our word is the one thing no one can take from us unless we leave it vulnerable. All I'm saying to you, if I'm right about what you're being called on to do, is that you should refuse to break your word. And if your world suddenly becomes hostile to you because you choose to preserve your honor, you can come to us instead of going home and facing execution.
You're absurd.
Rogris turned away, but did not move. After a moment, he turned back.
Speaking hypothetically, if what you said were true, and I did what you recommended, my children would never understand what I'd done.
You got it backwards. If my suspicions about your orders are correct, and you disobeyed them and went home, you'd be executed, and might never have even last words to say to your children. If you come over, our intelligence division can get messages to them, and I'll guarantee they'll do so. Or I'll arrange to do it personally. You'll have your chance to make your reasons known to your daughter and son. Even a chance to offer them passage to the new Republic, if that's something they want.
Ah.
Rogris shrugged.
You spin interesting fictions, Antilles.
Wedge held out a data card to him. On this is my emergency contact frequency. You should be able to reach me this way at any time. If you want to accept my offer. Even if you just want to gloat.
Rogris took it. I can't pass up an opportunity to gloat. Goodbye, General.
Good night, Admiral.
The following evening, the Perator called another gathering on the world government question. Red Flight again wore their New Republic dress uniforms for the event. Tomer joined them.
It's going to be war, he said, his tone regretful. There's no stopping it now.
Do me a favor and kill power to this performance, Wedge said. Maybe you are a little sad that a war is resulting, but the rest of it is all according to your plan.
Toma looked confused. My plan? I think you're more than a little mixed up, General.
No. Let's go back in time a little bit. You're assigned here as regional head of intelligence with the task of bringing Adumar into the New Republic.
I'm just a diplomat.
Shut up. But they need a world government to make the task a simpler one. And you get to work.
Tomer shook his head, a denial, but his attention was fully on Wedge.
Now it gets sticky. They want to talk to famous pilots, so you send for me. As soon as I arrive, you discover that the Empire is also here, which drastically moves up the time frame you're working in. That means creating a world government by the fastest means possible, by persuading the Perator of Catan to implement one through leverage and conquest. Something that appeals to him anyway. You arrange to sacrifice hundreds, maybe thousands, of innocents in a war that will accomplish your mission.
You're interpreting everything in the most negative possible way.
Wedge felt a surge of triumph. Tomer was no longer denying his role in the intelligence side of these affairs. And the thing is, you have to win. You know that you can't explain your whole revised plan to General Kraken. He'd never go for it. You had to implement a communications blackout to keep word of any kind other than your own reports from reaching him. It's success on Adumar, or the end of your career, isn't it, Tomer?
Tomer glared for a long moment.
You could have helped. Yes, I might have been able to help. If you'd been straight with me, if you hadn't settled on Catan running everything through a war of conquest as the only way to get your job done.
You used the tools available to you. Here's the Perator.
The ruler of Kartan emerged from his doorway, offering up his charismatic smile for the assembly. This time there were no flat screens broadcasting his words, though once again they were amplified so all would hear.
It is with deep sorrow that I must announce that certain elements have chosen not to enter into our plans for the future. In specific, the seditious forces ruling the nation of Helbigardia and the Yedagon Confederacy have decided to issue statements of defiance. Their actions are clearly intended to endanger our future relations with other worlds, and could leave Adamar, a weak, disorganized planet, ripe for conquest from outside. So, for the sake of the security of all Adamari everywhere, I declare these nations to be the targets of efforts of pacification, to begin very soon.
He paused, and applause broke out among his courtiers. This day, Wedge saw smaller clusters of foreign dignitaries in the hall. He suspected that the ones present yesterday, but not today, were either under arrest or en route back to their native lands. The Perator raised his hands against the applause, and it died away.
Will the pilot heroes of the Empire and the New Republic please approach?
Wedge put on his business face and led Tycho, Jansen, and Hobby forward. To his right, the Imperial pilots had formed up in similar military precision. The ruler beamed at them.
Your 8 pilots have brought considerable delight and knowledge to Adamar, but it has all been in circumstances somewhat different than those that brought you fame. I would now like to rectify that. Would you lead units of the Kartan armed forces in action against our enemies, so that we might grasp the full measure of your skill and honor?
Terfenir was first to speak. It would be my tremendous honor to demonstrate what we have to offer the people of Kartan and Adamar. The Perator smiled upon him, then turned to Wedge.
And our representative of the New Republic?
Wedge cleared his throat. This was not going to be good. We must decline. The ruler's expression became one of sorrow, regret.
But why? Can it be that you care for us less than your Imperial counterparts?
Wedge considered his words for a split second. No, I suspect we care more. But we must demonstrate it differently. In this case, with a refusal.
I see. Please, withdraw.
Tomer had made it to the Perator's side. His eyes, his hand gestures said that he was pleading with the ruler. But when Tomer turned away, his expression was downcast.
General Andalis,
the Perator called.
I declare you to be an enemy of the state of Kartan. But I am told by Lord Tomer Darpan that it might cost Kartan friendships to have you executed as you deserve. So, I declare you and your pilots exiles. Remove yourself from Kartan by gauntlet to Geltella Air Base, and never show yourselves before me again.
Wordlessly, Wedge turned away from the Perator and headed toward the chamber's exit. Tomer, walking quickly, reached Wedge's side.
You're in trouble. You'll probably be dead before you get to your blades.
Wedge stopped. Blades? We're returning to our X-Wings. Tomer shook his head.
They're being impounded. They'll have 4 space-worthy blades ready for you. If you can get up to the Allegiance in them, past the blades that are sure to be gunning for you up in the air, you get to live. But,
Tomer shrugged, helpless.
Anyone can kill you, Wedge. It's legal. From the door out of the Perator's palace to the Allegiance, you're all fair game.
Moments later, the 4 pilots stood at the exit from the Perator's palace. Seeing the distinctive New Republic uniforms, a crowd in the courtyard shouted for them to come out. Wedge pulled out his comlink. General Antilles to Allegiance, requesting emergency evacuation from planetary surface. There was no answer. Antilles to Allegiance, come in. Nothing. Wedge turned worried eyes to the other pilots. All right. We've somehow been countered. So, whatever they expect us to do, we don't do. Four, what do they expect us to do?
Hobby said.
Run out toward the gate and get shot.
Correct, so we don't.
Wedge scanned the courtyard. He saw men and women, 36 or more, waiting for them to emerge. He saw parked wheeled transports and one repulsor lift transport to the left. He nodded in that direction.
That one's our target, he said. Go!
They moved out and onto the stairs at a trot. As soon as the crowd raised blasters, Wedge and company opened fire and broke left. Incoming fire looked like Stormtrooper new recruit target practice. Inaccurate, but promising eventual deadly hits through sheer volume. Jansen lagged behind and shot precisely, using the native skill with blasters that had been his since childhood. When the leading edge of shooters began collapsing, firer after firer taking Jansen's blaster shots, the line wavered. Wedge, halfway across the courtyard, also fired as he ran. And then the repulsor lift transport was before him. He hurtled over the rear and felt the impact of Tycho landing in the bed behind him. Tycho lay on his stomach at the transport's starboard side, his pistol braced against the lift. He fired once, twice, three times, and Wedge heard a shriek from the crowd of shooters. There was another thump, and Tycho said, "Four's aboard!" The vehicle shook again, harder than before, and Tycho announced, "Three's aboard!" Wedge glanced at his men. "Anyone hit?" They shook their heads, not looking at him, concentrating on pouring blaster fire off the side. Wedge increased power, and the transport soared upward, straight toward the crowd of shooters and the gate beyond. The air was thick with the smell of blaster bolts, and thick with the bolts themselves. Wedge shifted his body as the flooring beneath him began to glow as blaster bolts struck from below. Then they were past, floating at a good clip above a street heavy with pedestrian and transport traffic, pursuers trailing out behind them. Then the repulsorless transport's engine coughed and the vehicle lost speed. The pursuers began to gain ground. Tycho popped the metal plate over the transport's engine. "Shot," he announced. "Blaster fire has ruined it." "Right," Wedge said. "Jansen, what do they expect us to do?"
"Set down and run on foot, or hop another transport."
Jansen, keeping low, leaned over the rear of the transport and fired off several shots at the pursuers.
"So, we do something else," Wedge said.
He aimed the dying transport toward the structure opposite the palace gates, a tall residential building. As they neared the building, Wedge could see the flat screens on its exterior. All showed an identical image, their transport. Wedge offered up a growl. A flat cam was broadcasting their escape, and it was probably up on walls and personal flat screens all over Kartan. People below recognized the scene, and some unsheathed blaster pistols and began firing. Then Wedge saw that their transport, even at maximum altitude, would not be high enough to climb over the rail of even the lowest balcony before them. It would probably slide in just beneath. In moments, the balcony was mere meters ahead.
"On my mark, come forward and jump!"
Wedge launched himself upward, swinging himself over the balcony rail, his pilots landing beside him. Opposite was a set of double doors, the entrance into some noble family's quarters. They charged through, surprising a trio of servants setting dinner plates. Wedge said,
"Don't move. We're just passing through. Where's your cloakroom?"
Jansen kept the occupants under guard, while Wedge grabbed four dark cloaks. Then they raced back onto the balcony. Moments later, all four pilots dropped to the street and merged into pedestrian traffic. They pulled up their cloak hoods as survivors of the shooter's crowd turned the corner, blasters ready. Wedge and his pilots passed through that crowd of amateur assassins and continued onward, forcing themselves to walk at a measured pace.
"So far, so good,"
Wedge said, his voice low. "Keep your eyes on the flat screens on the buildings. If we see ourselves on them in real time, we know we're in trouble."
"What's the plan?"
Tycho asked.
"They know we're headed to Giltella Air Base. And we do have to go there if we're going to get off planet. They'll have people on the most obvious routes to the air base and probably a whole congregation at the base's main gates. So, we go by side streets and back routes until we're near the base."
"Getting into the base will be the hard part," Jansen said.
"We'll improvise," Wedge said. "We'll need a wheel transport, one of the flat cam units our pursuers are carrying, and four sets of women's clothing."
Half an hour later, the four of them sat in a wheeled transport 2 blocks from Giltella Air Base, wearing Adumari women's clothing.
"I can't override the local flat screens," Tycho said. "There's no procedure for that."
He gestured at the flat cam unit they'd taken from a man who now slept behind a stairwell with a bump the size of a comlink on his forehead. "My guess is that when we broadcast the recording, some local information distributor will decide whether to put it up on the flat screen citywide."
"Which they will," Wedge said, "considering the subject matter. All right, start broadcasting."
Tycho hit a set of buttons and then carefully placed the device out on the street.
Wedge set the wheeled transport into motion, heading straight toward the 200 eager killers awaiting them at the airfield's gates. Each time they passed the flat screen, Hobby said, "Still the old stuff."
The broadcast showed glimpses of them in their stolen cloaks. Now their transport was just coming into visual range of the crowd at the airbase gate, and men and women there began to notice their approach, to point.
Wedge felt his stomach tighten. "Come on, come on. Maybe we did something wrong," Hobby said. "We probably failed to..." "Oh, there it is."
On the flat screen, Wes Jansen drew his blast sword. The view wavered as if the flat cam holder was trembling. There was a blue flash off screen to the left, and then the world spun as the flat cam holder crashed to the ground. The pilots had made the recording minutes ago, standing before a very distinctive building a short distance from the airbase. Ahead, the crowd was watching the recording. A roar of anger and expectation rose. Within moments, most were in motion, heading straight toward the pilot's transport. And beyond, Wedge hoped, to the building that had been the view screen's backdrop.
"Get ready," he said, and drew his shawl closer about his face.
In seconds, the crowd reached them and ran past. Perhaps 30 men and women remained before the gates. Many appeared to be watching the flat cams, but quite a few still had their attention on the approaching transport. As they neared, the closest members of the crowd began shouting,
"Did you see them? Did they kill the cam wielder?"
As if in answer, Wedge poured blaster fire into the locks on the gates. Fire from the other 3 pilots joined his. One succession of blasts, probably Jansen's, chewed away with extraordinary accuracy at the mechanisms. The guards behind the gates threw themselves away and down. The transport crashed into the gates and rolled through. Jansen, Hobby, and Tycho continued pouring suppression fire at the back. One of the guards stood, hands up, and ran shouting after them.
"Cease fire! Flood pilots!" said the man. "Please! You're upon airbase grounds. You're safe until you take off again."
Liveried base personnel stood by at the hangar, ready to supply the New Republic pilots with blades, flight suits, helmets, and personal gear. And while they ran through an abbreviated checklist, flight after flight of Blade 32s flew by the hangar doors,
declaring their presence, announcing challenges we can't refuse this time, Wedge decided.
He switched to red flight frequency. "What's our first order?"
Tycho's voice came back immediately.
"Whatever they expect us to do, we don't do."
"Correct, too. Red flight, come around 180 degrees. He swung the nose of his blade around until it was pointed toward the sheet metal rear of the hangar. "On my command. Fire your missiles and all speed forward. Ready? Fire!" Four missiles flashed instantaneously to the rear of the hangar and blew the sheet metal panel into oblivion. Wedge kicked his Blade 32 forward and began climbing as soon as he emerged through the hole. His lightboard sensor data was confused, made erratic by the tremendous smoke cloud he was climbing through, but he clearly showed a half dozen blades hovering over the hangar. Had Red Flight emerged the way they were supposed to, they would have done so right under the guns of this ambush party. Other groups of flyers circling at some distance were turning in toward Red Flight. Altogether, Wedge counted at least 30 enemy aircraft. 30 against 4. In the past, he'd bullied his way through such impossible odds, usually through use of stratagems set up well in advance. Here, he had nothing like that working in his favor. Red Flight was barely 1,000 meters up when the first enemy's 2 separate half-flight knives neared attack range from overhead. "Loosen up the formation," Wedge said. "Remember, it's me they're likely to concentrate on."
The dozen enemies scream down at them with lasers blazing, 8 or 9 of them focusing fire on Wedge.
I have an idea, Wedge said.
2, 3, 4. Set 1 missile each to detonate at a proximity of 250 meters. Fire at me, then be prepared to prey on targets of opportunity.
Wedge's own pilots fired on him as he'd instructed. And a moment later, he was enveloped in fire and smoke. In his mind was a picture of the 3 explosions, placing him toward the westmost edge of one of the blasts. He snap-rolled, emerging belly up from the cloud, then dove into it again. There was another detonation nearby, close enough to rattle his fighter and hurt his teeth. He heard equipment shattering within his blade. Then he was in open air again. He glanced left and right, then at his light board, which now featured a crack across its crystal surface. The enemy blade formations were now scattering, and the members of Red Flight were diving upon them, loosing lasers and missiles as fast as fingers could pull triggers.
1, 2, are you all right?
I'm unhurt, 2. Some damage to my blade.
Wedge cocked his head as he realized he was hearing a new persistent noise. His stomach sank as he recognized it. Whistling. Air was passing through his cockpit, making a constant unmusical sound as it did so.
I've experienced a hull breach, he said, keeping his voice unemotional. If he couldn't catch the breach, he couldn't reach space, couldn't make the allegiance.
Hobby's blade was now trailing smoke, a stream of it emerging from beneath his cockpit.
4. I see it, boss. Still functional.
Tycho pulled into wingman position behind Wedge's blade. Through his viewport, Wedge could see that Tycho's canopy was cracked with char marks indicating laser hits. Wedge swore to himself. Tycho couldn't make space either. That left Jansen, the only one of them with a space-worthy blade, the only one who could reach Allegiance and tell the story of what had happened to them on Adumar. Then Jansen's blade was enveloped in an explosion cloud. He emerged intact, or so Wedge thought at first. Then his blade began rolling to port, and Wedge could see that the starboard wing was completely gone.
Punch out, 3, he said.
Jansen's blade was now sideways and was beginning a looping descent to the ground. But Jansen was in open air, a meter square flat device above him.
Stay with 3, 4, Wedge said. When he reaches ground, land, join him, and tell him to take you to that club he and I visited the other night.
Acknowledged, Lee.
2, you and I are going to finish this.
The enemy blades had gathered into formation, 2 triangles, each triangle headed toward one of the Red Flight flyers. Wedge nodded. They'd finally learned something about not just mindlessly prosecuting the most prestigious enemy. That was too bad. Now was not the time for them to get smart. In these slow-maneuvering blades, missiles gave his opponents a serious edge. He had to take that edge away. He slammed his control yoke forward, diving straight toward the Kartan streets beneath him. He angled to slide in under the canopy of balconies, hoping he'd correctly calculated their height above ground, and found himself roaring a mere 3 meters above street level. Behind him, 2 of his pursuers imitated his maneuver. The first one came in too high. Wedge saw it shudder, then saw its port wing disintegrate from impact with the balcony. The blade spun, then crashed down onto the street. The other blade continued relentlessly onward. As he reached the next intersection, Wedge yanked the controls hard to port, turning into the new lane, and reduced strength to his repulsor lifts. His blade dropped nearly to the street surface and continued its spin until it was pointed back the way it had come. His pursuer whipped around the corner, making better time than Wedge. His nose was elevated far above Wedge's position, the pilot obviously expecting to catch him in his sights farther down the street. Wedge fired, his lasers raking the blade at close range. The underside of the blade opened up like a seam bursting under pressure. Now Wedge's light board showed only buildings all around him.
Red 2, report status.
All clear,
Tycho said. In seconds, Tycho joined him from points east.
If anything, he looked worse than before. His cockpit was now shattered. His blade couldn't hit high speeds without wind hammering him. "We're not going to make space, boss," he said. It was hours later, the darkest and quietest hours of the night, when Wedge and Tycho arrived at the door of Yella's quarters. The door opened to Wedge's knock, and he took Yella in his arms. He heard Tycho follow and close the door behind them. Jansen and Hobby were lounging on the sofa. Charisse stood at the wall, and Hallis sat on a chair. Wedge blinked at them. "I'm sorry," he said. "I seem to have interrupted a party." Yella smiled at him. "More like a conspiracy." She led him and Tycho to additional chairs. Wedge sat wearily and looked among the others. "You'll excuse me, I hope, if I look a little confused. Charisse, how do you come to be here? And how are you?" Charisse raised and lowered her left shoulder experimentally.
"Better," she said. "I was out of danger, and they brought me down to Cartan, where I learned of the air duel you'd had. I went to your quarters, where I found Hallis, but not you or your X-Wings. I knew if you were to go anywhere, you would come here, so I did too."